a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Mike is in Sandy, and good morning, Mike. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So last September, beginning of September, I planted some kale, spinach and bok choy, and I think arugula. And the packets of the kale and the bok choy said frost tolerant, like 25 to 55 days for the kale and 30 to 50, 35 days for the bok choy. The bok choy died around end of December, and the kale survived, and the spinach survived. The spinach didn't say anything about frost tolerant, but it survived, and then it just exploded in the spring. So I'm just wondering, but the kale, on the other hand, it did well, but it was branchy and didn't have a lot of, it was just kind of branchy. It wasn't like the bushy type. So does it matter what type of kale, if I want it to survive the winter?
Well, I think you are running into that we are just too cold for these crops for active growth through the winter. And even if they overwinter, oftentimes they try to go to seed in the spring and you're not getting what you want. And so for us to grow these crops in northern Utah, you need a cold frame or at least low tunnels. A cold frame is better because there's more air volume that stays warmer longer. But it's a lot easier to do if the crops are in some sort of protection because we're about 10 to 15 degrees too cold in the winter to reliably grow them.
Well, but the spinach, it exploded like in the spring, like March, April, and
yeah.
We had tons.
Yeah, and that's great. But what I'm talking, if you're actually wanting production through the winter, that's what you would need to do. And
oh, then, no, no.
Yeah, some of the coal crops just will not overwinter.
Right. So I wasn't planning on harvesting much during the winter. Like we harvested a tiny bit like in the late fall, you know, but then in the springtime, didn't have to plant them, didn't have to water them, and they just exploded. And we harvested until around the 1st of June, late May at least. So that was the advantage of the spinach, but the kale, it survived also, but it just didn't, it was kind of branchy.
Yeah, I think the kale would be better planted in early spring.
Oh, just plant.
Yeah,
that why it was branchy, you think?
I think so, because it had that winter cold period that it does things physiologically to the plant that it thinks it's gone through an entire season and it tries to go to seed. And so if you plant it in early spring, you have that vegetative period that you're going to probably get better productivity out of.
Okay. But the spinach should be fine because it, I mean,
yeah, the spinach did fine, and you've got to play with this stuff a little bit. But the only other thing I would know to try, and I don't know if it would be a benefit, is maybe some like straw mulch or something around the plants in mid-November and then pulling that mulch off in mid-March.
Okay, so yeah. You mean on all the plants or the ones that are more sensitive?
The ones that are more sensitive, and that might help them overwinter a little better, and the ones that do may be more productive. But for a lot of these, it may be worth just planting in the spring.
Okay, so for like bok choy that died, the straw mulch might help?
Yeah, it could, just because bok choy isn't going to be as winter tolerant here as it would be in Moab or St. George.
Okay. Would that maybe work for kale, but arugula as well?
You could try it. I mean, at that point, you almost might need a low tunnel to where you have those hoops, you know, the small hoops with the plastic over it, and then some insulation on the sides to keep the cold weather out. But I don't know. The arugula is one when I have grown in the past. I started it in trays in late February and then planted it out as soon as I can in March, and it's done really well that way. I just started it in my house and planted it.
Planted in early March, you said?
Mid-March. If you can go a little sooner if you have a low tunnel.
Okay. And for the spinach, it's any variety, right? It wouldn't matter?
No, it wouldn't, as long as you're using a traditional spinach.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for your help.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says, a few shows ago, you gave a percentage of what to expect actual mature size of trees to be in Utah compared to the size shown on the tag. They're wondering what that percentage was again.
Well, you know, when you see, you go to, let's say, North Carolina State, they have a very extensive plant description catalog that I use quite frequently on the show. And if they were talking about this sycamore maple that I mentioned a while back, a normal sycamore maple, it will say 60 to 70 feet. Well, how many trees in Utah do you see get 60 to 70 feet? Very few. Maybe sycamore, maybe American elm. So we've got two species. Maybe cottonwoods would be three. So what I tell people is when they see these sizes on the internet, to take about two-thirds of that, because we are so dry, it's hard for the trees to get enough water up into a canopy that tall, and it limits their growth. And so when you come into Salt Lake City, there's lots of mature trees. There's really mature ones in some of the parks, but if you look at our tree canopy compared to like Portland, Oregon, or Savannah, Georgia, Portland and Savannah, the trees are a lot taller because the climates are a lot more friendly to those trees getting tall. So,
okay, they're also, yeah, wondering, does that vary with conifers versus deciduous trees?
Conifers that are native to Utah, it's a little different. Like a blue spruce over 50 to 70 years can reach up 50 to 70 feet, especially with some age. You know, Austrian pines will get their limit's probably about 50 feet. And so it's just really species specific. But especially for deciduous trees, the reason we're not seeing lots of huge oaks and, you know, all the different species you see in other parts of the country is that we are so arid that when a tree gets that tall, it's so dry, the humidity's so low, that as the trees try to draw that water up, they can't draw it up fast enough, even though it's in the soil and it's there. They can't get it fast enough, and they really struggle.
All right, so two-thirds. Next listener says, their elderberries drop while still small and green. What could cause that?
Lack of pollination or maybe nutrient deficiency. I would maybe fertilize with some triple 16, make sure that they are watered probably every 7 to 10 days to a depth of a foot. And then just if they see bees and other pollinators all over the flowers, they're probably getting good pollination. If they don't, they may need to plant other pollinator-friendly perennials in the area to encourage beneficial insects and pollinators to start frequenting the area.
Okay. Next person wants to know when they should dig potatoes.
Anytime. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, wait till they get hit by frost, but the farmers that grow potatoes are harvesting now in through October. And what I will tell people to do is to maybe go out and either cut the tops of the plants off or get a string trimmer to make it a little easier to sift through the soil and just get a shovel off to the side or a spade or a digging fork and just make sure that you're 6 or 8 inches out from where you think the potatoes are and just start lifting them out of the ground. But most potatoes are harvested through mid-September into early October.
Next listener would like to know how far they can trim their lavender in inches that's dead without killing it, or should they just leave it alone right now?
Light haircut at best.
That's an inch?
Inch, yeah.
They wanted to know in inches, Tom.
Yeah.
Next person says, one of their peach trees is already turning yellow. The other is dark green. Should they be worried about that?
If it's turning yellow, it's stressed from either drought or greater peach tree borer or something else. Mm-hmm. And so they really need to start looking around the tree. The first thing it would do is get the grass away from the trunk if it is there and check for a greater peach tree borer. If they Google or search pictures online, they can see what it looks like at the base of the trunk. They'll see a lot of gumming at ground level. The bark may be rotted away. But that's the first thing I would check for. If that's not the situation, check the irrigation.
All right, so there is something to worry about there, Chip. Next person, do mature trees like cedars need fertilization? If so, what fertilizer would they use?
Cedars?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking juniper here, not generally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cedar is just a catch-all for a number of different cedars, like that Alaskan cedar we were looking at earlier.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's actually not true cedar. I won't get into that now, but at any rate, true like junipers, which we call cedar here, need little fertilizer. And if they were going to do it, then in the spring, just really lightly. We don't want to be fertilizing trees and shrubs now. 16-16-16 or 20-00.
All right, before we take a break, next listener wants to know, is it okay to plant strawberries in the fall for a better first-year harvest?
Maybe. If they could get them in early September, that would give them enough time to root out. Right now, I'd be a little worried that they may not establish enough.
Okay. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. Back to our phone lines. John is in Layton. Good morning, John. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. We have a catalpa tree. It is about 80 years old. From pictures, we can tell that. And I'm just wondering how long it should live. According to Google, those trees last 60 to 75 years. It's at 80. It's about 75 or 80 feet tall. We want to move before we have to take the tree down. How long do these deciduous trees live?
Are you talking about a tulip poplar?
No.
I've never heard of a catalpa tree.
K-U-T-U-P-L-A.
A catalpa.
Catalpa.
Yeah, catalpa. Okay. Yeah,
with
there
the
we
long
go.
Bean-looking things that it sheds every year.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Messy tree, but beautiful.
They are. So your concern is how long will it live?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the guidance from average? That's what I'm kind of looking for.
I see catalpa trees that are mature anywhere from 50 to 100 years old. You know, when they start to get to that 80 to 100 years, I would want to keep an eye on it and make sure that you don't see mushrooms coming out the side. All the limbs look healthy because it's getting a little bit geriatric at that point. But
right.
If the tree looks really healthy and you don't see any mushrooms, no dead limbs or anything, then, you know, you've probably got at least another 10 or 20 years.
Okay, it's flood irrigated weekly, so
that's probably how it has survived so long, because that mimics how it would be watered in a forest. You know, they would get a big rainstorm, then a period of time without, then another big rainstorm.
Right. Yeah, the whole yard looks good. I mean, you can't find the end of the grass because the roots are a foot deep because it's been flood irrigated for 100 years. Okay. Thank you for your guidance.
Yeah, you're welcome.
John, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they have potato bugs in every scoop of dirt in lawn or garden. How do they get rid of them? This is Holly.
They are normally decomposers. They feed on organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so compost, plant material, That's what they're usually feeding on. Every once in a while, they can get into tomatoes if they're overly ripe and have cracked or something. But the majority of the time, that's what they're doing. And so it sounds like habitat modification is in order to where she needs to find out what they're feeding on and why, and eliminate that or somehow change the habitat to have fewer of them. So at least as far as trapping, some things that she could try is putting out newspaper, a section of newspaper folded over so they crawl in there, and then she could just pour them into a bucket with an inch or two of soapy water in the base to help them pass to the afterlife. But they could try things like that, but they are there because there's a food source.
So are they harmful to plants?
Not generally. Once in a while, they may feed on plant leaves or something, but they're primarily there because there is decomposing organic matter available.
Okay.
Or dead organic matter that they're feeding on.
Interesting. Next listener says, what grass seed can they plant other than bluegrass for a fine blade drought resistant lawn?
Turf type tall fescue. Salt Lake City has that new blend that has hit, but it's not really available in all areas yet. And so until retailers outside of Salt Lake City get it, then I would probably stick with turf type tall fescue because it requires less water. It stays green. It roots deeper.
Okay. Next listener says, when should they bring in their hanging Boston ferns?
When temperatures are consistently below the mid-50s in the evening.
Okay. How important is it to cut your grass back this year? They kept it long for quite some time to save water, but they're wondering if they should be cutting it back.
With cooler weather, you could probably start mowing it at 2.5 to 3 inches. But the final mowing in late October or early November, you should drop your mower down to below 2 inches because that will help prevent the spread of snow mold. If the grass is shorter, it won't lay over. And that snow mold thrives right under the snow in sometimes low oxygen environments. And so if you have your grass falling over, it creates that situation. So if the grass is short, if you get a patch of snow mold, it's far less likely to spread very far.
Lisa wants to know, she says she has a maple. It's about 10 years old, has been producing small brown leaves lately. When they did add some iron to the soil, it did green up a little bit. But what's happening there, do you think?
Could be a lot of things. Drought stress, heat stress, lack of iron, so it can't produce the leaves like it should. So I would put another shot of chelated iron down in the spring and make sure that even if it has sprinkler irrigation, that every 2 to 3 weeks she runs some sprinklers under the tree to force that water to penetrate further into the soil.
Okay. Next listener says, if they plant grass in October, can they then put pre-emergent down in the spring?
No. You have to look at the pre-emergent you're using because you have anywhere from a couple of month wait to a full year. October's not an ideal time to plant grass if you can avoid it. But if you do, you definitely would not want to use a pre-emergent in the spring.
Next person says they heard us talking about mulch and they saw in a video that someone used newspaper or cardboard or burlap under the mulch to enhance weed control. Would that work? Because they don't want to use the fabric.
The cardboard and newspaper break down over time, and so you don't run into the same issues that you do with weed fabric. And so when people are trying to control a weed like filled bindweed, they will do that so that they don't have to use herbicides, and it's kind of effective. But it does keep the weeds from popping up through for the season.
Okay. Break for the top of the hour news. We'll be back following the news. Stay with us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.